Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Week in Review. I don't know if you've seen these pictures, but it's amazing. The world is still reacting to Israel's unprecedented bombing of a refugee camp in Rafah. Also, closing arguments have conducted in the case of former President Donald Trump, and the U.S. Congress becomes the Jerry Springer Show. Why not? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do it. All righty then, let's get started. So, the gang's all here, as they used to say in the good old days, joining me as part of our esteemed panel, where we promise fresh and not mundane opinions, are the hosts of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, Garland Nixon and Dr. Wilmer Leon. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's begin with one of those, words escape me at this point. I think I'm calling it the most barbaric act the world has witnessed in quite some time, which, it must be said, is following months of other barbaric acts. There's an international outcry right now against Israel after the, I can't believe they did this. The government of Bibi Netanyahu bombed a refugee camp, which is where people were told they would go because that's where they would be safe, so said the Israeli government. Close to 50 people were killed, many of them burned alive. Oh, and there are no hospitals there for them, for their... Can you imagine? You're burning and you have no hospital to go to. There's no medication. This is so... Anyway, Israel says, oops, it was a mistake. We'll investigate. No, they won't. The U.S. is saying, don't do it again or else. That's bull crap. We all know it. There is no or else. But here's what's important. About 150 countries all over the world, including the U.N., the Red Cross, the ICC, are now calling Israel every name in the book. And they say that they're going to be held accountable. Well, let's talk about that in just a little bit. First, let's look at some of this video. I was talking to one of my producers who helped prepare that video, and he was telling me it was really hard to put that together because you had to edit out so much horrible, horrible stuff that we just didn't think it was appropriate to show you. You can find it yourself if you want to see it, but we're talking about bodies burning, body parts. It's really horrible, Garland. I don't even know where to start with this. A country that has been told by every entity in the world, please don't do this, don't go into Rafah, and if you do, be careful. I mean, they just said, we're going to do whatever the hell we want, and to hell with you, it seems. To me, I don't know. What do you say?
Well, and that reflects the foundational problem here, and that is that Israel, as a proxy for the U.S., doesn't see itself as part of an international community, doesn't see itself as responsible for answering to the structures that we try to have in this world so that we can resolve conflicts in a diplomatic way. So they've come up with a narrative. They're the good guys, and Hamas, which applies to anyone they don't like, is the bad guys. And therefore, they argue that anything we do is okay because we're doing it to stop the villains. It's a sad state of affairs where we've gotten here.
Yeah, you know, I may have mentioned this to you guys before, but as a reporter in the United States for many years, I've covered a lot of disturbances, you know, riots, those things that break out in different communities from time to time. And it's as if our government would say, okay, let's just bomb, you know, East Los Angeles, or let's bomb Chicago or Philadelphia or Miami. where we've had disturbances in the past because there's some people there who are bad and we want to get them. So let's just annihilate the whole damn town. I mean, that's almost what I see going on here. I will tell you this. Norway came out this week. Spain came out this week. Ireland came out this week. And France may be on the verge of doing it as well and essentially establishing Palestine as a state, which very few people in the world have done. At least the G7 haven't. If France does it, Wilmer, this would be the first time that any G7 country does so. Wouldn't that be important?
Symbolically, yes. The United States did bomb the MOVE compound in Philadelphia.
You're right.
As an example. But, two things here. One, the optics are horrific. Looking at this incredibly disturbing video, it made me think about, I think, going back to the 14th century in Dante's Inferno.
Yeah.
The nine circles of hell is what I thought I was looking at. And then two, listening to President Biden, listening to Vice President Harris, Jake Sullivan et al., their language is so devoid of logic. It is intellectually dishonest.
Yes.
It made me think about the late Black Panther Fred Hampton when he said, "You can't murder a freedom struggle. If you try, what you get are answers that don't answer, explanations that don't explain, and conclusions that don't conclude." And so when you listen to Biden, when you listen to Jake Sullivan, that's what you hear. Oh, it doesn't cross a red line.
Yeah.
Because I said, don't have a ground invasion. Even though there were tanks on the ground and boots on the ground, they're saying, oh, because it was an airstrike, it's okay. That makes no sense.
The trial of former President Donald Trump has finally come to an end with both sides presenting their closing arguments. You know, what's interesting about this trial is the fact that it's actually the proxies who are speaking on behalf of both sides. And one of them is the son of Donald Trump. The other one, De Niro.
It's an insanity. It is an embarrassment. It's an abomination to democracy and to our republic. And yet it continues. Everyone in this case is conflicted, and it hinges on one man who's not just a liar, convicted, someone who's lost his law license, has been disbarred, someone who served jail time for lying before congressional bodies. And that's it. That's where we are today in America.
If Trump returns to the White House, you can kiss these freedoms goodbye that we all take for granted. And elections, forget about it. That's over. That's done. If he gets in, I can tell you right now, he will never leave.
It's amazing to watch these two guys, but the jury has to decide not whether he paid somebody off. I think that's clear that he did that. The question is, did he pay somebody off for political purposes? In other words, did he not want voters to know that he had slept with the porn star and that's why he paid it? Did they prove that? I don't know. Garland, what do you think?
Well, I think something was interesting about those two comments. And number one, I do think that Donald Trump's son had a strong point. It is very difficult to get a conviction when the star witness his veracity is in question, to say the least.
Michael Cohen.
So I think that's a strong point. Yeah, that's a very strong point. The other thing I think that was interesting is Robert De Niro. I don't know if he was supposed to be commenting about the trial, but if that was in fact his comment about the trial, it implied that he only saw the trial as a means to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. He didn't mention the trial. He just said, if Trump can't become president, I'm not saying, I certainly think that's part of the motivation for that, but notwithstanding what I think, it appears that clearly De Niro sees that as a means to stop Trump.
The whole thing was weird with De Niro being there. I'm not saying he doesn't have his opinion, because he's an American citizen and everybody has an opinion to opine about anybody, whether you want to criticize Trump or the guy who's in the White House right now. But it was kind of weird for him to be doing that there. And it sounded to me when I heard him talk like he was sent there as a proxy by the Biden administration, which is weird. Why are you using that guy to speak for you? Why don't you speak for yourself? But here's another thing. Donald Trump went to a place this weekend where he knew he was going to be booed. And guess what? He showed up anyway, and he got booed. It was the annual convention of libertarians, a group of people who are pro-market, anti-war, anti-spending, anti-government, my kind of people. And they believe both Democrats and Republicans are both full of crap and both guilty of all of those things. The fact that Mr. Trump showed up there knowing he was going to be booed is, I think, noteworthy. Let's watch it.
DeRoy wrote, Donald J. Trump will address the Libertarian Party and its national convention on Saturday. The Libertarian Party should nominate Trump for president of the United States. Whoa. That's nice. That's nice. Only if you want to win. Only if you want to win. Maybe you don't want to win. Maybe you don't want to win. Thank you, DeRoy. Thank you. No, only do that if you want to win. If you want to lose, don't do that. Keep getting your 3% every 4 years.
Keep getting your 3% every 4 years. Well, I don't know. Listen, I give him props for showing up. You know, there's something for taking the heat, right?
Oh, no question. Kudos to Donald Trump for walking into the lion's den and marketing to the lions. That's democracy in action.
And this election is going to be won by a percentages. If he can get 1% of that 3% to flip over and go with him because Biden didn't show up and he did, that could make him the next president.
We know that. As with all elections, turnout is very important.
Yeah.
But in this 2024 election, what we know is, or what we believe is, there are an inordinate amount of people that are so disgusted with both sides of the argument that they're going to be more inclined to stay home or not vote the top of the ticket as opposed to voting the top of the ticket. Yeah. So to your point, you've got to show up. You've got to campaign for every single vote. You've got to knock on every single door. You can no longer just afford to play to your base.
Yeah.
And for as many things as we can say about Donald Trump, he is an incredible marketeer.
Yes.
He understands the rhythm.
Yeah, he certainly does. So listen, something really weird has just happened in Taiwan. It kind of surprised me, but then again, I'm not as well-read and as informed and as smart as you guys. You guys may have already figured this out. But when we come back here, I want to play something for you and talk about something that's going on right now in Taiwan, which does not bode well for Washington, interestingly enough. We'll have that in just a moment. Stay right there.
Of lies. If wars can be started by lies, peace can be started by truth.
The importance of WikiLeaks can never be overstated. That transparency is an extraordinary journalistic achievement.
They just succeeded in finding documents that existed and making them available to the world public. I mean, what could be more honorable than that?
By publishing information and sharing information with the public, he was exercising the right to free speech. He did so in the public interest.
I've watched a tsunami of lies and smear engulf him endlessly, vindictively, perfidiously, and I know why they smear him.
Isn't it ironic that no one who instigated that illegal and immoral war has been brought to justice? But the great truth teller sits behind bars, waiting 175 years of virtual death sentence. Are we going to let that stand?
Welcome back to Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here today with Dr. Wilmer Leon and Garlic Nixon. This is your week in review. Guys, thanks for joining us once again. I want to talk a little bit about Taiwan. For all the banking, the barking that we hear in the corporate media about China and how it has no right to interfere in the politics of Taiwan, guess what we're now hearing? That actually Taiwan kind of wants China to interfere, believe it or not. In fact, let me take you through this. A lot of folks in Taiwan want to officially reunify with China. Who knew, right? So what happened? Taiwan's legislature has just passed a series of law seeming to favor China and diminishing the power of the newly elected president, who happens to be anti-China. As with many political discussions in Taiwan, historically, well, let's just say things got a little testy. Now to the French Parliament, because they fought as well. But before we get there, I want to bring you guys in. I want to know what you think about this thing where, as I understand it, help me here, guys, the Taiwan legislature has decided that they want to strip their newly elected president of some of the powers he has, for example, in defense. And that's not going to sit well with Washington, because this guy's kind of anti-China. This kind of changes the equation here. Garland?
Let's start here. For the same reason that the U.S. opposition to the Georgia foreign agent law only proves how much the Georgia needs the foreign agent law, the U.S. opposition to this new legislation, to me, solidifies the fact that it's probably needed. I think what's going on is this. You have a basically a U.S. / Japanese puppet as the new president of Taiwan, and you have a parliament who certainly doesn't want to be Ukrainized, and they're looking at what the United States has done to Ukraine, and they don't want to end up like that, so they're trying to pass some legislation so that they will have some level of sovereignty and independence, rather than simply being thrown into the gauntlet, you know, fed to the dragon in the same way that Ukraine's being fed to the bear.
Well, here's my question, Dr. Leon. I'm wondering then if the next step is that we will see kind of a color revolution situation here. I mean, the U.S. or some Western power is going to go in there, as they have in the past, and said, wait a minute, we've got to change this equation, maybe foment a coup, maybe see protests in the streets. Can they do that in this country? Do you think they can do that there, like they did in Ukraine, as Garland just mentioned?
Well, I think the result of their most recent election is an example of U.S. intervention in the process. I think that's to a great degree how you wound up with the president that you have, and which is why you have the divided government situation that you have right now, is that the U.S. backed a president that backed American interests. And you have a legislature that is saying, we understand exactly where this is going to take us. This is going to take us, or make us, a Ukraine, and we don't want to be cannon fodder for Western interests. And I think that's at the crux of what we're seeing here. So I think you've seen the color revolution, or the beginning of the color revolution, as a result of the outcome of the election.
I mentioned this a little while ago, that something interesting is also going on in the French Parliament. So French MPs were having a very serious discussion about joining Spain and Ireland and Norway. Those countries just recognized Palestine. They're not part of the G7, by the way, those three. France is. Now, the French are arguing that they should do the same. Suddenly, an MP stands up with a Palestinian flag. Supporters of Palestine in the French parliament rise to their feet and applaud. And then all hell breaks loose.
It va continuer, madame, la France.
Monsieur de Longue.
There's something about people fighting and arguing in French that I just find attractive. But nonetheless, Wilmer, I'll start with you. The guy holding the flag, the MP, he's been suspended for doing so. This is kind of a crazy scene and yet telling. What does it tell you?
It tells me that the Zionist interests have lost control of the narrative, and that this is something that they've been afraid of for an incredibly long time, which is why we can go back a week or so to the Washington Post article that Eric, the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, was on WhatsApp chats with Zionist interests who were pressuring him to go into Columbia and the Columbia University and break up the protest. And it said in the piece, and it said in their streams, they don't want to lose control of the narrative. Hmm. They have, and they can't put the genie back in the bottle. And going back to the first story that we discussed, the horrific video that we saw of the invasion of Rafah, the last kicks of a dying mule are the most dangerous.
The last kicks of a dying mule are the most dangerous. I'm going to write that down, and I'm going to use that. Of course, with your permission. That's a fascinating thing to think about. Now, what's interesting is that France is a G7 country. If a G7 country is the first to go on the record as supporting Palestine, I don't know, Garland. I mean, that could kick the mule back awake or something. Did I say that correctly? Could bring the mule back to life or whatever the proper phraseology is here.
Well, what we're seeing now is that the brutality that the United States is supporting in the conflict in Gaza is destabilizing the empire. You know, you pay attention to me. I argue that European countries are not sovereign nations; that they're U.S. colonies that do as they're told. But the U.S. has been able, in many instances, to at least camouflage its brutality somewhat throughout the world, or excuse it as, you know, liberal interventionism. And now the brutality is so blatant and out in the open that it just expects its colonies to just accept it and say, "Well, we're desperate now; we can't hide it anymore." And people inside of the colonial structure are saying, "Yeah, this is a little too much for us; we can't handle it," and it's destabilizing. It's the empire internally.
Yeah, that's why this last act, just the one we started this show with, is, I just think, the ugliest of all, because it came right after the ICC condemnation, right after the UN condemnation, right after the warning telling them do not go into Rafah. I mean, the whole thing is just such an ugly picture, and it seems to be an act of defiance on the part of Israel that I don't think the world, as you both stated so eloquently, is going to tolerate. Now, let's talk a little bit about our own country, because things are getting really weird here. There was a time when the United States and its leaders positioned themselves as the torch carriers of democracy and dignity, both in how they dealt, you know, with the rest of the world leaders. I mean, say what you want about, like, George W. Bush, but he met with Putin. Say what you want about Nixon. He went and met with, you know, the prime minister, or with Mao Zedong in China. Well, today this kind of stuff doesn't exist. Take a look at this recent incident in the U.S. Congress. Just take a look at this.
Do you know what we're here for? You know we're here about AG.
I don't think you know what you're here for.
Well, you the one talking about. I guess
I think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
No, ain't nothing.
Hold on. Order,
Mr. Chairman.
That's beneath even
order. Order of your committee.
Order.
I'm just curious, just to better understand your ruling. If someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built butch body, that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
A what now?
Chairman, I make a motion to strike those words.
I don't think that's
Hold
a
on.
Parliament.
I'm trying to find clarification on what qualifies. Chairman,
I
motion to
I
strike
no
those
idea
words.
What you just said.
What the hell is going on here? I mean, that is the U.S. Congress. What are they even talking about? I mean, guys, pick a winner here. I don't know which one of you wants to start, but I'm embarrassed watching that for my government and for my Congress.
Well, there was a time when decorum and collegiality were supposed to control the dialogue in Congress. But I would submit that starting with the Tea Party, the tribalization of American politics has only become more intense. And now it's a matter of camps. It's no longer a matter of common ground. It's no longer a matter of trying even providing the facade of operating in the best interest of the American people. It is merely my camp versus your camp.
But I'll tell you, when those camps come together, when they talk about stuff that's important, when they talk about unnecessary wars, when they talk about inflation, when they talk about corruption, when they talk about a lot of these things, contractor money, then all of a sudden there's no camps. They march in order, Garland. It's fascinating.
Well, I would commend to our listeners, to our viewers, a book by Roland Barthes called Mythologies. And in that book, he compares politics to championship wrestling. And that's what we're seeing here. This is championship wrestling. This is trash talking against each other, where, you know, in championship wrestling, people know it's a fraud. They know it's fake. They know there aren't real heroes and real villains. But it feels like they're real heroes and villains. So they get the same internal dopamine reward. That's what American politics are. Yeah. It is nothing. This is championship wrestling. We know that this is a pillow fight disguised as a knife fight. And in the end, they're going to vote for $95 billion for military corruption. But meanwhile, they get the wolf, brother, I'm going to slam you on the ropes, brother. And we all cheer for the Vero villain or the hero, and knowing it's all a fraud. The chairs have paddings on them. They have paddings. Nobody's getting hurt by getting hit by those chairs.
So well said. They talk about butch bodies, and they talk about eyelashes, and they get on CNN first story. But when they talk about the things that matter, they don't even, the story doesn't even get covered. And maybe that has a lot to do with their comportment as well. We're out of time. You guys have been fantastic. It's always great to have these conversations. You give us a different perspective that's necessary on these kinds of stories. And I thank you both for being with us. That's our show. Remember always to look for the truth, not in boxes, because the truth is everywhere. Look for it. Truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. That's what we believe. And we'll see you here next time.